Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. You've done it all. You've walked the tightrope of success and accomplished so much in your career. Now what? How do you keep redefining your success and expanding your emotional well-being? Join us to hear talk on mindset, motivation, and your growth in handling the challenges you've experienced both in circumstances and with yourself as a leader. Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders with your host, Tracy Crossley.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. And today I have with me another wonderful female leader. Her name is Diane Helbig. Hey, Diane, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let me tell you guys a little bit about Diane, and we will get into our conversation today. So small business owners and leaders hire Diane to help them create strategies that work. Her superpower is being a pragmatic possibilities thinker. With Diane's guidance, professionals decide on goals, create an action plan, and implement that plan. She walks alongside them like guardrails, keeping them from falling off a cliff. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And Diane is also the author of Succeed Without Selling and the host of Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast. Diane is a member of the Newsweek Expert Forum and a member of the NABO Cleveland Board of Directors. So Diane, once again, welcome. And I know this will be an exciting conversation. So yes. Let's start. Yeah. Okay, here's the question. The question is, when you were a little girl, what did you want to do when you were going to be an adult? Like, what did you dream of growing up and doing?
Well, when I was in sixth grade, I wanted to be a heart surgeon for all of, I don't know, a month. And then I wanted to be a Supreme Court justice.
Wow. What brought that? Like, what was the draw for that?
So I think I'm really good at seeing both sides of an argument. So there was just something about it that fascinated me. And I thought, boy, would I like to be able to dig in and, you know, really try and figure out these issues. It was, you know, a little strange, but that was it.
Well, you know what? I think it can be intriguing. Like, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer at one point. You're reminding me. And I think I forgot that. Like, I wanted to be a lawyer at one point because I thought I liked to argue when I was younger. I don't like to argue now, but when I was younger, I did. and I wanted to save the world. And I thought, I can save the world, right? By being in a position like that.
Yes, exactly. Right. I think I wanted to be a lawyer. As a matter of fact, I graduated with a pre-law area of concentration.
So the focus for you, because I always look back, right? And I think some of the things that we thought about as kids, not that, you know, when I was five, I wanted to be a crossing guard. I don't have any desire to be a crossing guard, but you know, it would have been fun for a while, probably, you know, but what characteristics were behind that, right? Like, what was the real drive? Well, it was to help. I was going to help little kids cross the street, right? And I tend to find that in the interviews that I've done, a lot of women, we want to be doctors, we want to be lawyers, we want to be, you know, these things. And most of us aren't becoming these things, by the way. These are, you know, what did you want to do? And what's interesting is how that, you know, we want to help others. I think that runs through most of what women do. Not necessarily does it mean I'm going to be a therapist, but, or, you know, a doctor, but I think through what we choose to do, maybe we find ways of helping others. What would you say to that?
I think that is absolutely a great point. And I was reminded yesterday, for some reason, that when I was in junior high school, different kids would walk home with me and they would tell me their problems and I would give them solutions. And to the point where my mother said that I should go to the principal and ask if I could have a little office outside the principal's office. We're at lunchtime. I could just meet with kids. Like they could just show up and, you know, it was like a natural thing. I've always been that person who wanted to help people problem solve, you know, getting knots out of necklaces and things. I totally get what you're saying.
So, and that of course brings me to, so in between, let's say childhood, you know, you go to college, what were some of your thoughts about the career you were going to have? Like, what was the driving force behind, this is what I'm going to do?
Well, when I went to college, I went because I thought I wanted to be a special ed teacher because I had been working with severely mentally impaired children in high school. And I quickly realized it wasn't intellectually stimulating enough for me and was highly emotional and probably wasn't going to be a great thing. And then, you know what? I don't think I really knew what I wanted to do. I sort of stumbled into my degree. I stumbled into my work life. My mom was sick when I graduated from college, so I moved home to take care of her and went to a temp agency and said, I need a job. I just need something to do. And they gave me a job typing, even though I had flunked the typing test.
Why do you think they gave you a job typing? I'm just curious that's not something you could do.
Because the company that was their client needed a body in that seat and they needed to place someone. It's my opinion. Who knows? It was so long ago, but it made no sense because you had to type during the busiest part of the day where the pressure was the greatest. So it wasn't like I could go slowly. Right. So, but they hired me full time into a management position. And then my career just sort of, you know, went from there. And everything that I've done since I was a child has led me to where I am now. So a lot of times I think we don't know. We just, you know, if you just go and sort of believe that somehow it'll figure itself out. I think that's how I've always been.
I think that life works that way for the most part. I think that you can have one idea of what you want, but there's so many people, let's say, that graduate college and they graduate with a specific degree, and yet that's not anything, you know, relevant to what they end up doing.
Right. Right. I mean, my degree was in social science because the college I went to had a new program and they took all my credits and threw it into this new interdisciplinary program. So, and social science makes sense for what I do. But mm-hmm. it didn't have like a career path.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like I said, oh, here's what I'm going to do with that thing. So,
right. I think that's a lot of things. So tell me then, you know, because it sounds like for you, you've been a leader of sorts since you were a kid. It sounds like it. I mean, if you're going to set up your office and all the kids are coming to you, obviously, not that you're really going to set up an office, but the point being, sounds like you were a leadership. And if you went from a temp position to a management position, you know, what do you feel about yourself and your leadership traits? Like, what do you feel is, you know, what people see in you and has them promoting you as you've been promoted? And of course, I know you have your own business now, but what would you say that is?
I think I present myself as being confident. You know, when I was a kid, my parents said, you can do anything you want. You just have to be willing to do the work. And I believed them. So anything I went into, I just believed I was going to be successful at it. And I think that shows up as a level of confidence. I am not afraid to speak up, you know, have never been afraid to speak up. So there's that. And problem solving. I think I've always been good at being able to solve problems and communicate with people. I mean, we moved every year to year and a half when I was a kid until mm-hmm. I was in sixth grade. So that's the other, you know, like you learn how to build relationships and communicate and that sort of thing because you have no choice.
Right, right. So that becomes how you go into any new situation then, having that kind of confidence. And so, you know, one of the statistics that's talked about, I'm sure you've heard it before, is only 21% of CEOs in the United States are female, which means there are 79% that are not female. So what do you think of that? And do you see some path to it changing?
I do see a path to it changing. I'll go backwards. I do see a path to it changing. I've thought a lot about this. And mm-hmm. what I've realized is women coming up did not have role models to follow because women were not in leadership positions. Or very few. You know, when I was growing up, Golda Meir was the whatever you are, the premier of Israel. She was it, pretty right. much. You know, she was... So it's really difficult if you don't have role models to follow, to know how to show up in any sort of environment, business environment, civic, you know, political, whatever. And so I think that's been part of the struggle. It's not that we're not capable. It's not that we don't want to. It's that we don't see people who look like us doing it successfully. So that I think has been part of the struggle of that happening more swiftly, I will say. But it's part of the reason why I feel that it's getting better, because now we do. And the way women see themselves, I think, is changing. I think we feel mm-hmm. more empowered. We feel more like we have a right to be at the table. We have a place at the table. So, which I think is different from how women were raised in the past. So,
yeah, I would agree with you. Yeah, I was going to say, I would agree with you to a certain degree. You know, I do a lot of research and studies, you know, read these studies, and I find it interesting, you know, that women still suffer from a lot of self-doubt. I mean, people do in mm-hmm. general, but, you know, as leaders they do, and there's still insecurities. And I think that, you know, when I look at that, I'm all about, okay, let's get to the insecurities and let's start doing something about those. You know, but for you, and what you were saying earlier is that you basically don't hold back from whatever you're going to say, right? Like you said you always speak up, right? So a lot of women don't, or a lot of women get stuck in a bias, you know, like we take a bias that's from society, you know, like a prescriptive bias that says, well, you're a woman and you need to act like one. And I know that a lot of that's still there, because like in your case, maybe, you know, you would speak up, or somebody like you would speak up, but then in their head, they'd be thinking, oh my God, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, I should take that back. Or, you know, I should say that nicer or whatever. Do you ever find yourself doing that at all? Or is that something that just, nope, you just say what you want and that's it?
You know what? I never found myself saying, wow, maybe I shouldn't have said that, even to the point where I said things I really should not have said. Yeah, part of that was being young. But I do remember people looking at me and saying, what is this little girl doing here, thinking that she can run this department? And because I had never experienced that growing up, it made no sense to me. I couldn't figure it out, because I was raised in a household where gender wasn't an issue, you know, it wasn't a barrier to doing right. anything. So, you know, that was, and even when I got older and I got married and had kids and was part of a civic thing, and we were talking about the schools and rebuilding them and whatnot, I mean, people were like sort of tapping me on the head and metaphorically and saying, oh, honey, you know, mm-hmm. it's that's cute. And I was right about what I was saying, but I wasn't necessarily taken as seriously as I think I should have been, or maybe a man would have been.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, the unfortunate part. I also was not raised thinking being a female was something that was going to hold me back. Not that I was also told that, that I was going to be successful or anything either, but I was never told outright, well, because you're female, you know, you need to just stay home and bake cookies. But the thing is, I think we're given a lot of mixed messages. And so I look at, you know, the disparity in pay, you know, all these different things that women are still struggling with. And then mm-hmm. I think, okay, so what are some challenges you found yourself overcoming on your path of leadership? You know, whether it's, let's say, about money, or even the title of the job, or, you know, decisions that were made where maybe it favored somebody who wasn't doing as great a job, and, you know, I don't want to say weren't promoted, but it doesn't even have to be that. It could be somebody got a project that you could have done, but maybe because they, you know, they weren't you, that somebody else got it. You know, anything at all that you can think of any stories?
Yeah, sure. So there were definitely situations where for me, I was given the position or, you know, earned the position, whatever you want to say. I had really good mentors around me, both, well, male. I didn't have great female mentors around me. I had great male mentors around me. And yet I wasn't necessarily taken seriously or listened to when really important decisions needed to be made. So I worked for a company that was relatively new when I went to work there. And so the whole thing was get the product out the door, get the product out the door. This was this, you know, big focus. And unfortunately, they really needed to stop getting the product out the door. And they needed to bring the salespeople in and educate them on this is what this product is, right? And yeah. And I could see it. I don't know why, but I mean, I could see it clearly. We were headed for, because I was traveling to where these clients were and talking to them. And I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I said something to my boss. I said, you know, this is a problem. This is what we really need to do. And he said, because I said, we have to stop selling and mm-hmm. bring all the salespeople in. And like, he laughed at me. And you know what? A couple months later, they came over the PA system and said, company's closed. Everybody go home.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, and we sold to our competitor. I mean, it was, and I was just looking at him like, this didn't have to be this way.
Right.
I may be young, I may be a girl, but it's a tough, that's tough for, and.
Well,
and
I think, Diane, you know, not to cut you off, but one thing I wanted to bring up before I let this go, in terms of what you're saying, it's just, I think so many companies are run on a fear-based mentality. So if the idea of stopping selling probably scared the crap out of your boss, who thought, oh no, if we do that, then how are we going to make any money? No money's going to come in the door. You know, he probably went into that mm-hmm. place. Right. And yes. I think a lot of businesses do this, is that we respond, we react to the circumstances and we're like, oh, okay. Yeah. And we make a bunch of fear-based decisions that end up in the long run costing us more or are painful or what have you. What would you say?
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree with you. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I watch companies do it all the time. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, then later in my career, I went to work for a company in a sales position, and they were constantly changing what we were selling, how we were selling it, what the commission structure was. You know, were you partnering with someone? Weren't you? You your head would spin.
Right.
So, and yet everyone would do what they were asked to do. And it was like never satisfied. And the company was making money. It was doing well. So, right. But it's that fear of we're not doing well enough, or
right.
People don't care as much as I do. Well, you know what? When you're right. They don't.
Right.
Okay. They don't own the company. Right. So it's an interesting journey, I guess I will say. I think it's been really interesting. I've been on sales calls where the prospect was totally condescending, rude. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
Well, you know what? I got myself through it as well as I could and walked out the door and said to the gal who was shadowing me, that's someone we don't want to work with.
Yep.
You know, if you're going to act like that, mm-hmm. you're telegraphing how you feel about women, how you feel. I mean, if you feel like you can get away with that in a prospect meeting, that's how you're going to mm-hmm. behave all the time. So
well, and
it did shock me.
I'm laughing because how many businesses, okay, everybody listening, how many of you have said yes to that kind of, excuse me, shitty client, and you pay for it every freaking time? I have never had it where somebody has been, excuse me, a pain in the ass and come in the door without these crazy expectations, right? Because usually they have crazy expectations, like you're going to just, yep. you know, perform miracles yep. for them. Yep. But it's that point of, you know, as a salesperson or even a business owner, or maybe you're in charge of salespeople or what have you, it's something that you have to look at, because when you have that kind of strife that you bring into a company, I think that just brings more challenges rather than going, no, I'm actually going to be very clear about the clientele we want to have.
Yes. Yes. It's so true. I mean, we get bad clients who suck the life out of our business, take away our joy and our ability to go get good ones, right? Because we're drained, exhausted, spending all of our time with this jerk. And people tell you who they are. And if they're going to behave that way at the outset, they're going to behave that way all the time. They're not going to be happy. They're not going to refer you. You're not going to make money.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right. They cost you more in resources usually than somebody else would. Yes. Resources being paying for extra overhead because, you know, they're working overtime, or paying for things that you didn't actually think were in the budget now become part of the budget. So I mean, just, So I'm going to pivot the conversation just a little bit. And there was a recent study, and I cannot tell you the, because I haven't actually done the research. Usually what happens is if somebody hands me a study, I want to look at, okay, what is the study comprised of? How did they get to those conclusions, right? Because I think there's just a lot of BS studies out there. But this one was kind of interesting. This was a study that was done by an organization. And what they did was they sent, I think they sent out surveys. This is my guess. They don't say how they did this to women in 103 countries and asked them, you know, their how people treat them when it comes to success. And so it's interesting because I've always heard the term, oh, nobody likes successful women, right? Like successful women, we've got to be, you know, extra nice, or we've got to do something so people like us, which is just a bunch of BS too. But anyway, yes, this is part of like what I am trying to head on change here. So in this study, I'm going to give you one of the statistics. I'm just curious what you think of this. So, 72% of the respondents were left out of meetings and discussions or were ignored. And the respondents are supposedly successful women. What would you say to something like that, where other people are obviously jealous or, you know, have issues with a successful woman and let's just exclude her? What would you say to that?
Well, I would say they definitely. It appears that they feel intimidated by these women. And so they don't want them in the conversation because they know it's going to be the emperor has no clothes. I think we need to figure out how to get in that room. Or we need to go someplace else where we are respected and valued for our participation and viewpoint.
Yeah, or create our own room, meaning create your own business, because sometimes it's that's where you find your value. I'm not telling everybody to go quit your job and do something different, but what I am saying is that, you know, there's always options. There's always options. It is not that you put up with this crap. This isn't the be all end all job. And therefore you can speak up. You can do something about it. That's what I think. Because some of these other statistics were 68% had their achievements dismissed, 66% somebody else took credit for their work. You know, things like that, that we think, is this stuff still happening? It's still happening.
Oh yeah. Well, that's still happening. So I would actually question the statistic about whether their achievements were really not acknowledged or whether that's how they felt. Because I think that's also part of it. You know, we can get in our own head and feel like we're not being appreciated for what we're doing when, you know, this is, I mean, like men, they don't have a need to have that sort of confirmation necessarily all the time, like women do. So I think we have to be careful with that one. When it comes to someone else taking credit for your work, man, I think that's when you have to stand up and for your own good, not because you're necessarily going to convince anybody or whatever, but that's theft, right? And that's, bullying. I mean, I could put a lot of labels on it. That one is, I think, is really dangerous to an organization.
Oh, I think so. But I've heard of things like this, you know, now that I shared that, I'm thinking about not in my life, because I, like you, would always speak up, which is a reason why I think corporate and I went our separate ways eventually. Not saying people don't speak up in corporate, but you usually, you know, there's a fear of upsetting the apple cart, you know, and saying what you truly feel, because you're afraid of the pushback. And I understand that. But women leading, we have to get that self-confidence of believing in ourselves. We don't need to go and ask 100 people what their opinion is, if they think we should do what we're going to do. We got to trust ourselves. Right. And that trust is built up internally. It's not going to come through your accomplishments. So, you know, Diane, like in your case, so you went off on your own at some point in your career, right? You decided, I'm done working for other people. What was the catalyst for that?
So the company that I was working for was making all of those decisions around the sales team, and it was not in my best interest, or anyone else's for that matter. But my father passed away very suddenly, and it was just one of those moments in life where I just realized this wasn't working for me. I really wanted to have more of an impact on the world than what I was currently doing. And I start, you know, talking to people I knew and exploring. And I was 45 when I decided to go off on my own. I mean, I was not young, had two small kids, you know, left a secure job, but I knew it was the right thing to do at the time. I knew I need, what I usually say is I needed to be the victim of my own decisions, not someone else's. And so, you know, had to go, and felt really confident, calm. My husband was a bit of a wreck, but I just somehow knew this was the thing that I should be doing, taking all that experience in life and helping other people,
Got that.
Yeah.
That's great. So how did you know who you wanted as a client? Like, was that apparent from, you know, your past and you had these relationships, or how did that, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I knew I wanted to work with small business owners initially because I had watched them struggle so much with so many aspects of business that I kept thinking to myself, this is unnecessary. You do not need to be, I mean, I would watch salespeople, people own businesses, go into a sales meeting and beg for the business.
Oh, geez.
And not even listen when the prospect was saying, okay, sure, we'll do this thing. And then they would just keep talking. And I wanted to kick them under the table and say, oh, stop. Right. Don't seriously step on your head. And it was a woman. And so, you know, great product, great, whatever. And I just thought, this is insane.
Yeah.
This has got to stop. Right. And I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the time. So,
yeah. So you went into, so explain a little bit more about, you know, what you do then with small businesses. Do you just work with the sales teams? Like, what is it you do?
You know, I will work, typically I work with the owner and the leadership team, just helping them strategize, figure out what's getting in their way, and then figuring out the strategy that they will actually implement themselves. Because I can't give them mine, but I can help them figure out what they, you know, because I can see what's going on in their head and the things that are holding them back as business owners or humans or whatever it is. And so we just create these strategies. A lot of times it is a sales strategy. That's what they need. They need a focused, systematic process. But sometimes it's just actually creating the processes and systems in their business, hiring, dealing with employees, growing, shrinking, you know, expanding into new markets. It varies. It changes all the time. It depends on the industry. It depends on the business. I will go in and train a sales team. You know, I do that a lot for small businesses. So depends on what they need.
And what is it that you absolutely love about what you do?
So that's such a great question. I will tell you that my favorite thing about what I do is when I have a client say to me, well, I just asked myself, what would Diane tell me? And then I went and did it. It's like, yeah, right? Now I'm in your head. Once I'm in your head, you're good to go. Because you get it. You figured out the script. That's my all-time favorite thing.
I love that. Well, because they're listening. You're making an impression. Obviously, what you're doing or telling them to do is successful. So I say that goes a long way, personally.
Yeah,
and that's great. Yeah. And so is there any certain industries you work with? You work with everybody?
You know what? I work with everybody. The smaller, the better, because I can really affect change. You know, big organizations, it's close to impossible. Mm-hmm. But I don't really care the industry or the geography. None of that really matters to me.
Okay. I was curious about that. So, okay. And what else before we wrap it up, would you want to leave the audience with as far as, you know, any of your, let's say, past experiences that are relevant or any sort of tips, anything at all?
Wow. Anything at all. I will say, you can do anything you want to do. You just can't do it all at the same time. That'll be my tip.
Okay. And Diane, if somebody wants to find you, where would they look?
The best place for them to go is my website, which is helbigenterprises.com, because everything is there. They can schedule time with me, check out my book, check out the podcast, whatever they want to do.
Awesome. Well, Diane, I've really enjoyed this lively conversation we've had today. Yeah, I love when there's that sense of confidence in saying what you mean and just saying it. I happen to be one of those people too. So I just totally jive with that. So thank you for bringing that.
Thank you for bringing that.
You're welcome. And everybody listening, thank you for listening. And you should be bringing that too. So anyways, I will see you on the next episode of Earned Wisdom. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today. For more information on Tracy and her programs and to set up a discovery session, email business@tracycrossley.com. That's business@tracycrossley.com, and go to tracycrossley.com to get your free download entitled Stop Your Inner Dictator. Thank you for tuning in to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders.